Hi, welcome to the Peptide Summit. My name is Dr. Matt Cook, and it's my double honor to have part two of two with Dr. Isaac Elias. And of all of the people that we're talking to, I think he's probably one of the most thoughtful, incredible doctors who has a life of wisdom that we need to understand and hear about. And so I'm delighted and grateful to have you again on the podcast. I'm super interested in continuing to listen and hear where you're coming from, because I think you're one of the brightest minds that has ever been in integrative medicine. And I think that probably many of the things that I do and what we do in our practice is derivative of stuff that you fundamentally have developed. And I've been hearing for years, oh, Isaac Elias does this and that. And then I would kind of follow those directions. And now we're talking to you on a regular basis. And and Dr. Elias also has a fairly significant focus on teaching. And so I'm excited to hear about that. And then we're going to really dive into the nitty gritty of taking care of people. So welcome to the show and thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for your kind words and for the opportunity to participate with the second interview. And really, one of the big things with this is like, I feel like I made a new friend, you know?
So
looking forward to spending more time with you and learning from you. You're doing amazing things.
Yeah. I'm delighted that your daughter is going to be doing residency at Stanford. So sometimes you don't need an excuse to be close to each other, but then when you are, then that excuse is good.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Thank you.
How are you feeling? What's happening?
I'm good. You know, I'm back from Israel, and which had quite a miraculous story that maybe I'll plug in at the right time during the interview, because it's relevant to peptide therapy.
Okay, good. Good. That sounds good. So then today, you know, we're going to talk about apheresis, the galactin 3 blocker, and some adjuvant IVs. Where would you like to start?
I really would like to start by a little bit talking about my approach to peptide therapy.
Oh, perfect.
And really, when you look at peptide therapy, the power of peptide therapy, is it really, if we look at our, you know, Matt, if we look at our regenerative power, there's a certain stream of regenerative power that we have. The body goes through, you know, through wear and tear and regeneration. When you use peptides, it's like you're opening the dam and the water is washing. You get an opportunity to really regenerate. And when you regenerate, you can address so many things that are going wrong, right? Many of them inflammatory driven, fibrosis as a result, infections, autoimmunity, cancer, removal of toxins, etc. So once we open the dam, the real art is how do we guide the water to the right channel? How we make sure it goes to the channel we want, it gets the result that we want, without side effects, without going to the places that are not our favorite places to go. So this is really the process that I specialize. A lot of people refer people to me before peptide therapy to get them in the right way. And I found sometimes that really it's the adjustment pre-treatment. If it's peptide therapy, if it's therapeutic apheresis, I often tell patients it's the healing we did and the acupuncture and having the intention and opening the blockages that allowed the fancy treatments to work. So this is really what I want to share today, and what I will also share with the different free guide that I will send to the viewers during the summit. And so if we look at this, it's an opportunity to step back and see where does it all start from.
Okay, perfect. Take me there.
So really, this is what I call understanding the survival paradox, which is really the topic of my book I finally wrote in my 60s, The Survival Paradox. And so what is a survival paradox? It's really, if we really want to look and understand it, we have an innate survival response. It's what keeps us alive. You know, and this survival response is really all encompassing. And the survival paradox is all encompassing, because as part of survival, we either fight, we run away, or we hide. And all of this have profound physiological, pathological, psychological, emotional, psycho-spiritual, and community social effects, because the inflammatory response is the result of our survival drive. It's part of survival. What is survival? We, as people who want to survive, as a body that wants to survive, as a cell that wants to survive, cannot accept mentally, emotionally, experientially, the idea that everything that is expressed will fall away. We hold to things. And this basic holding identification is at the root of the survival paradox. So we want to try to change this as much as possible. Like, for example, in Judaism, in Kabbalah, it's called the tikkun, the fixing, our life journey. But from a medical point of view, we want to create the space to try to minimize or transform this very narrow reactivity in order to allow peptides, for example, to work. So it's really a shift between reactivity, something that the cell reacts to a poison. We react to somebody insulting us. We are struggling with something. It's an automatic movement of reactivity. And the reactivity happens immediately through the autonomic nervous system, right? It's our fear, fight, flight. And as part of it, again, immediately we either fight, create inflammation, or we run away and hide, we create fibrosis. And then the system can be balanced. On a deeper level, on a biochemical level, we start a survival response. And this survival response is at the root of our inflammation, our improper aging, our fibrosis, and every chronic disease. And it also exacerbates acute diseases. So while I want to touch today on the bigger things that we can do, really what my passion is, what I call open heart medicine, really transforming reactivity to responsiveness. Whatever comes to us, instead of reacting with survival, it's just like water to the fire that opens our heart, generate love, compassion, and healing for ourselves and for everybody else. But on a biochemical level, and it's interesting, you know, Matt, how my career is focused around this unusual training in meditation and healing for decades, being the doctor of the greatest meditation masters in the Himalaya and the one-on-one student, and researching Galactin 3, which no one knew is a survival paradox initially. We just knew in the early mid-90s that it causes metastasis in cancer. And then I started watching, wow, memory is getting better, joint pain when you block it with modified citrus spectrum. And I realized Galactin 3 drives inflammation, fibrosis. So on a practical level, we really want to block Galactin 3 on an ongoing basis. If there is, I'm now coming to the conclusion, and we see it from our research. A lot of my research is in cancer, but we see in other fields, in sepsis and acute kidney injury. I published important paper that if we can block Galactin 3, and I developed, you know, the first commercially available Galactin 3 blocker, modified citrus spectrum, pectosol, if we can block it, we can shift the survival paradox and allow for change. It was fascinating for me. I just came back from Israel and I talked with the oncologist who has been leading our studies for 7-8 years. And what we are seeing, some people, the survival paradox will shift right away. And the PSA, for example, in biochemical relapse of prostate cancer, the PSA will flatten and go down very quickly. Some, it can take a year until we see the results. But we are now seeing results in metastatic disease with blocking of Galactin 3, which nobody imagined, you know? Think about it, the only side effect is feeling better. And why? Because we are shifting. So today, I want to talk about this understanding of the survival paradox and about how to address Galactin 3, specifically in the context of of peptide therapy, as this is our topic.
And okay, that sounds good. Now, from a spiritual, emotional perspective, in terms of like, it sounds like you're helping basically that person come out of fight or flight into more of a state of consciousness, a conscious awareness. What have you found is the most effective strategy to help a patient make that step? And just calling it out, I think, is potentially a strategy. But
it is actually calling it out or allowing the patient to find it. It's like off topic. I'll tell you a story that I talk about in my book. A patient came from an accountant, CPA, in the mid 2004-05 with metastatic, metastatic ovarian cancer or breast cancer, I don't remember exactly, finished all treatment. There was one more line of chemotherapy. And it was the first visit. And usually in the first visit, I tell people look at what were their priorities before they were diagnosed, survival, how they react. What are the priorities after the diagnosis? Everything changes. And what is their wish list? So we talked about it. And then she disappeared for 6 months. And I was surprised because we had a deep connection, you know? And then she came after 6 months. I told her what happened. She said, listen, it took me 6 months to think about what you asked me. And I quit my work as a CPA. I'm now an artist. I write poetry. And then when everything changed and she was ready to do her chemotherapy with my support, and sure enough, she responded for years, you know? Yeah. And why? Because she let go of this survival drive. So the way to do it, coming into consciousness, like what we call mindfulness, very popular now, is the first step. But mindfulness has an effort, because in mindfulness, we try to be mindful. Anything that has an effort is limited, because real freedom has no effort, you know? Mm-hmm. And the way to really let go of effort, to go beyond meditation, which is very hard, almost rare, but I can guide people on the steps towards it, is by connecting to our heart. Because the mind thinks, right, here is a thought, here is a thought, here is a thought. What does the heart do? It flows all the time. Mm-hmm. It never stops. It's flowing. The moment it stops, we're dead. So when we connect with our heart, we can have a responsiveness to whatever the heart gets. We talked about it last time. All the dirty blood in the previous interview, all the dirty blood that comes to the heart connects with the universe and it gives clean blood. So this is a process that we have to change for us to really get acceptance. And interesting enough, galactin 3 is especially harmful in ejection fraction preserved fibrotic heart failure, where the heart becomes stiff. It just cannot open itself. It still gives the same percentage, but it's not ready to accept and give. It becomes very, very stiff. So this resistance, we start in one level with addressing galactin 3 as the foundational. You can understand why, because we know now that galactin 3 drives these processes. You know, I published some key papers last year with John Kellum, with the number one intensive care doctor in the world considered. And we were showing both in the ICU, when patients come with sepsis, with no kidney damage and no pre-existing conditions, the level of galactin 3 at time of admission will determine who will die, will get acute kidney injury. And in a very acceptable animal models, when we blocked galactin 3, we completely attenuated the interleukin 6, the cytokine storm, and the kidney damage and death of the animals. So why? Because galactin 3 is so primary to our inappropriate immune inflammatory survival-driven response. So this is one part. And the other part, on the other end, is learning how not to react. You know, I was telling you this story. I was in Israel. I have a foundation there for many years with a group of volunteers. And we have together, I led retreats for about 4,000 people. And after the COVID, we finally did it in person. So it was an open day. I had a clear COVID exposure because nobody goes with masks in Israel. It's insane. And I was checking twice a day. And I told this open day, I was already wasn't feeling well, but it was like 170 people was limited in the hall, the same number in Zoom. And I did okay, I taught all day, but I didn't feel great. And then the next day, the 7-day retreat was gonna start. People were waiting for 2.5 years. 45 minutes before the retreat, I check and I'm COVID positive. And it was remarkable. I had to either struggle or totally let go. I called the person who was kind of working with me to what I need for the retreat. We did one more test and we just said, it's gonna work. Everybody let go. They let go so much that they even videotaped and documented the process among the volunteers. And they just said, you know, that's it. It's a lesson in letting go. And the amazing thing, half of the people were never met me in person. Practically everybody stayed. And the volunteer pulled an amazing retreat from teachings I gave before. And I miraculously was antigen negative in less than 48 hours. So then once you do 2 days in a row, you're allowed to go out. And I was teaching from far away. I was able to participate. It was the most amazing retreat. Why? Because people just let go. They let go of the concept that they're not going to see me in person. And people are telling me, who have been with me for years, it was the most amazing retreat for them. So this is just the story that just happened to me. That's the making coffee. Just like 3 weeks, I was in Israel and I taught and I came back. But, and I'm fine now, but it's just an example of what would have happened if I fought. I would have been more inflamed. You know, I mean, it is, I'm waiting for 2.5 years. I prepared for months and you just let go minutes before the event. So this same process, we want to understand it when we really prepare for peptide therapy. Because why? Because peptide therapy is like a retreat for the body, right? You're giving it concentrated, powerful tools that can take them in many ways. So the first step, so if we really understand this, if we really get to this point, we really understand that there are steps that we want to take and which I really want to discuss with you a little bit.
Okay, perfect. I would echo that, and I would say even thematically, in when we see people, that is like something that we are trying to do with everyone, and sometimes with things like a stellate ganglion block or ketamine or just talking. To me, I think talking is my most effective way of coaching people into an idea of letting go and receiving and getting into that accepting kind of idea. Because if there's fibrosis in the heart, there's a mental, emotional, spiritual aspect to it, you know. And then interestingly, something like, you know, the Pectisol C is an amazing product that is a great place to start. But talk me through overall then how we would start in terms of preparing the body.
So if you're so right about the fibrosis, in my book, I write about mental and emotional fibrosis, because they definitely happen. It's about rigidity. So the first step is to create a space for change. And that's why detox and preparation is so big. And we've talked about it, you know, and I know it's a lot of what you do is your preparation. So the first thing when you prepare for a peptide treatment is really to have the intention, both for the doctor and for the patient. What do you want to change? What do you want to happen? Now, it's very tricky. So that's a very simple instruction, you would think, right? But how can you have the motivation to change without grasping to it, without the hope that it will happen and the fear that it won't happen? Because if you are coming from a place of hope and fear, you are contracting. So you need to allow this motivation and clear plan to come from an open space. So one of the basic things, because peptide therapy can be an intense therapy and can be an ongoing, but if someone is coming to you for one of your intense sessions, right, they have so many tools, is for them to create space. And how do you create space? by creating time, by slowing down. So don't come to peptide therapy in the middle of a 4 weeks busy time where you have no time. You gotta get allow time for change. So first, when you create time, things arise. Now, I know it from my personal experience, reflecting back, you know, I think I mentioned to you that for 20 years, I would go to the mountains to meditate for 2 months a year. And for 10 years, half day, every day. And I don't know how I did it, but I remember one time when I went for like 4 or 5 months, it's incredible the insight and the regeneration, because you just, the whole survival drive just falls and falls and falls and falls. So as we have insights, it's important not to contract them. And again, galactin 3 will create this lattice formation or biofilm in infection or arteriosclerosis or an acidic hypoxic microenvironment, right? And right away you can see the diseases. So we want to create the space. So first, prepare. Good diet, of course, it is not inflamed. Also, good hydration. The body needs to communicate. We need to be well hydrated. Once we prepare, we want to expose. And the exposure is the part where galactin 3 is done on one level, the injection that you mentioned are done in another level, and but galactin 3 leads the way because we got to dissolve the lattice formation. We can try to change things, but if they are covered with a microenvironment of inflammation, of lack of circulation, and galactin 3 forms it, you know, as part of the lattice, cover it. It's five, it's a pentamer that comes together. And I will share with the Samhita, I'm going to send some of the chapters of the book on the survival paradox, galactin 3 and modified C perspective. People will get a sense of how it works. So we want to really dissolve it. And then once we start.
And do you mean it, you're dissolving biofilms?
Yes, because people are not aware. It's part of it is me not telling enough. The main structure of the biofilm is galactin 3. All the glycophospholipid, all the glycoprotein, we know it, it's well published. We published like 5-6 papers on this with the USDA. And so that's why many people with Lyme disease, with mycotoxins, will tolerate, won't have side effects. They have to start sometimes with low dosages, which I will share, but they will tolerate well modified C-transpectin because it's very gradual. It's not only dissolving the biofilm, but it's also reducing the inflammatory unhealthy response. So you don't get this aggravation. Now, some people are very toxic, you have to balance. So part of it, we really want to prepare for as long as we need. And so modified C-transpectin is one part, but also going through this process and then help the elimination, the discharge and elimination. Helps the main discharge organ, you know, the liver, which we help all the time. There's so many preparation and helps the elimination. Urine, bowel, skin, breathing, and use the heart. All the other organs in the body eliminate. So we generate toxins and we try to eliminate them. The heart doesn't need to eliminate. Whatever comes to the heart gets transformed like wood in the fire. The heart doesn't care where the carbon dioxide came from. If it's a breakdown of a cell, a certain molecule that happened while somebody had a trauma, or a result of epigenetic from multi-generation before, or a result of a pesticide, the heart connects with the universe, exhales, gets the clean air, the infinite healing potential, and gives it out. So that's a bigger view of open heart medicine, of transforming the survival paradox. And that's really what I just touch at the end of my book. I hope sometime next year. I mean, I'm kind of sharing with you because we talked about topics and teaching. Instead of a summit, I want to do a 7 day of leading people through the process. It's a process. It's profound, you know, what happens to people. I mean, people's cancer markers get better. People's diseases go away. But also traumas get dissipated. And you see the same thing. You got an incredible shortcut because you are an anesthesiologist. You have ultrasound. You really learn this stuff. You go to a ganglion. Ganglion is holding all these years of traumas, you know, or generational traumas, right? You dissolve and then you wash it with supplement with IVs. So that's the preparatory phase. And then also allow the peptides to work. Take the time to connect with the change. Connect and keep the flow going. Like if something amazing is happening, it's great, but keep it going. And it's really about somaticizing the healing process. You know, one thing with meditation, people meditate outwardly and it's very good to disconnect from the body, right? The idea is that we somaticize, we connect with the body. And honestly, I don't know why I waited so many decades until, you know, sometimes like what I can feel now, I say, wow, how come I didn't feel it like 20? And I've been meditating for 47 years, you know, why did it take so many years, you know? Like the last 10, 15 years, really a big shift, maybe 20. I mean, first I was a slow learner, I had a lot to peel, but also it's an amazing journey. And then this flow of healing is really what happened with the heart, right? The heart flows all the time, like a flowing river. So the freezing, the grasping, the survival response, we got to let go of it. So simply is addressing and placing galactin 3. You know, when I talked to Avram Raz, which discovered really the galactin 3 and the lectins in the late 80s and published the first paper in JNCI in 95 about prostate cancer. We collaborate, we write some papers and we say, wow, nobody imagined, you know? I mean, he didn't imagine. I mean, I saw this inflammatory fibrotic effect early on and I kind of jumped on it. And now that's most of the research, you know? But I think the reason why we have to address galactin 3, not only with modified cisplatin, we are so divisive. We are so in our own world. I mean, social media is like a galactin 3 stimulator because it creates this micro environment of opinion, of belief system. And, you know, people struggle against each other, you know, instead of just opening our heart first to an opposite idea, that's a mindful approach, right? But if our heart is totally open, there are no opposite ideas. It all flows anyway. The essence is always the same. So that's really the deepest healing. Like I talked about this one patient, you know, and the part very esoteric, what happened to her when she left her body, but I don't want to mention it in the air. Somebody can read in the book. But what happened, and it doesn't happen to me all the time, is a patient went through healing without me doing anything. Because she was able to really take it. So a lot of my approach is empowering the patient. That's your approach also, like you said, talking works better than anything, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Then you got the peptides. So what happens, you got them on the right highway and then you just pedal to the metal, you know? And then, right, you know, you see it all the time. Amazing things happen.
So then I would, you know, I have this kind of interesting idea around that. So then we would be simpatico about this idea. And so then, you know, imagine there would be a trajectory of a person who might come to see us, but then now they're just sitting and you're at home listening to this and thinking about coming in. And so then imagine that, like, at some level, everything is okay right now. Like, everything is totally cool. Now, in a way, what I'm trying to do is, and what we're trying to do is just to promote that idea and help you feel that idea and talk about that idea, and then model that everything is okay through conversation. And so then I figured this one out this year. This is new for me, like in the last 6 months, because I have Michael and Tanisha are my medical assistants. And so then what I do is I'm kind of talking to them, but I'm, in a way, I'm pitching my ideas of health. But there's ideas of culture and other ideas that we talk about, just the ideas of the day. But I like to win. And I like to be positively received. And so then what happened is I'm dealing with millennials. And so then I noticed that the trajectory of what I say is very modified, because I had to modify a bunch of my ideas so that I would be well received by the millennials. But then what happened is it led me to change a bunch of my ideas, you know, and like, you know, people were, gender was a topic that is a hot topic, you know, for kids. And so then suddenly I just was like, oh, okay, I just receive all of that. And then interestingly, it's been a heartwarming experience, because the more that I let go and receive, then the more I realize, oh, everything's okay. And then if you can kind of get into that framework, then as we start to drive biochemistry, there's always a mental, emotional, spiritual issue on top of biochemistry. And so if you're receiving and everything is okay, and really, I would say, right, everything is okay, even though there's problems and difficulties and we have to kind of manage through those. But at like the spiritual level, everything is okay. And then, so then I'm always trying to kind of support and then get to that conclusion, because then everything else is easy.
You know, it's so much to talk about it. It's so true. You know, one of the qualities that you just described that you have, and it's a prerequisite to being a really good holistic doctor, is letting go of our concepts. You know, just like there are dogmatic conventional doctors, there are dogmatic alternative doctors. Some of the biggest healing of the most holistic patient, I got an amazing story in my website about such a cancer patient that was documented by an independent TV program, is letting go of concepts. Some of these holistic patients had their biggest healing when they did chemotherapy, and they broke the concept, you know? They broke the concept that something is toxic for them. So for us, what you're describing is the ability to let go of concepts. So framework is one level, but again, when we connect with the heart, we have no choice, because if we hold, the heart doesn't work. So if you look at the heart, and I think we mentioned in the other interview, the first thing we do after we finish all the work of getting dirty blood, connecting to the universe, moving it to the left ventricle and shooting it to the whole body with no discrimination, we nourish ourselves. We receive as part of giving to others. Self-love is part of loving others. Very opposite to narcissism, very much. And interesting for the heart, if you look at the heart, it's the only organ that nourishes itself after it finishes its work. You know, we could have had a physiology where the heart would get nourished in the atrium, you know, in other places. No, it does it only through the coronary arteries when it's finished its work. It's this selfless service. So when you connect with this, you start loving yourself with the flaws that we all have. You just start loving yourself as part of loving others. You know, it took me decades. And wow, now I rejoice in it, because it's proportional to how much I can love others. It's a profound experience. And in this retreat, when I was like sick on the bed, all the plans of everybody that was holding to me, Isaac, we need you. And I let go and they let go. And it changed something in my heart. Like I was mentioning to my family, there are a lot of things going on in my life now. And I'm just perpetually happy. And it's, but you know what? I'm not forcing it on myself. Mm-hmm. It's my physiology, and it's the right, it's nothing special also. It's the birthright of all of us. Mm-hmm. When we connect, when the separation breaks. So in the peptide therapy, it's a real tool. If we can get to this place through detox, you know, we talked about the importance that I overlooked of removing pesticides. We are full of pesticides. You know, you're in the South Bay. You would say people live in a nice place in Palo Alto on the way to the airport. It doesn't matter. You're getting jet fuel additives sprayed over you. And I see it in my testing. You see it also, you know, mm-hmm. in the urine test. Huge amounts of all these metabolites. So it's part of the cleansing. It's part of the preparation. It's part of moving. So I'm doing a lot of work. I just started a clinical trial on this. And the more we prepare, the more we create space, the more we know what we want to change, and the more we can bring a motivation that is bigger than us. We will heal in a deeper way. So that's an important point. I just want to add to it. Like if somebody...
Go ahead.
Okay, I'll go ahead. I'll go ahead first. So if somebody tells you, oh, I love playing golf and then I got cancer, and you ask them, what happened when you hit? So I'll just go to playing golf. Well, the body did it already. There is no big incentive for the body to recover. Is what would you do differently? What would you do differently? Not only for yourself. Then suddenly we are not contracted, because what our heart does, it gives all the time. And you know, and the people are not realizing that the heart electromagnetic field is big enough. It reaches every cell in our body all the time. When we are happy, every cell in the body heals, and people around us, it reaches them. And when we don't do it, we go into a sympathetic mode, or we go into a galactin 3 enhanced mode. That's why you can get people so many differences when they dissolve the galactin 3 lattices. So I'm looking here, I'm explaining the biochemistry, but as we started this, you and I are really interested in the big picture, in empowering people, how to really do it, you know, and to really explain to people, because blood goes everywhere, because the molecule of air that comes to our mouth or nose is connected with the whole universe. And with everything that happened in the universe, not only now, also in the past, the photons are running, right? And in the future. And the heart can always transform anything. Anything and everything is possible. Not everybody will be a miracle, but anyone can be a miracle. And the key to this is connecting to the heart, connecting to the flow, connecting to the change. And that's what you and I have been talking right before the interview about. How can we teach this? How can we tell people there are enough tools, there are enough choices for us to really heal? And that's really, and into this, you got this super jet called peptides, you know, it's a, or people, other people will use herbs, and other people will use body work, and we can combine them. Right. But the idea is that the tools becomes bigger than, the tools are part of a bigger picture. If we get lost in the tools, if we get lost in the biochemistry, well, just look at Western medicine, right? They are losing, the doctors are so overwhelmed now. I mean, it's painful for me. They have no time to think about the biochemistry of a cancer drug, for example. I do a lot of work with cancer. They don't have time, they tell me. We just don't have time. Just tell us how it works, what's the protocol, because it is not there that I'm any better than them. They just have to see so many patients. I decided not to be a part of the system for the good and the bad. There is a cost to it. But we want to take time and do things ourselves, right? So when you and I talk, we're excited about what we do. You know, we're doing it for decades. I mean, I've been treating people now for 40, almost 40 years, you know? And I'm just getting more excited, you know? Mm-hmm. I go to the clinic, it's like I heal just by being with the mm-hmm. people and working with them.
Me too.
Why? Because we are flowing. And right. it's nothing about us. It's the right of every person. So it goes back to, we cannot control what is going to come from the outside. We yeah. don't know what they will bring, but we can control our response. And that's the transformation of the survival paradox. That's the preparation for peptide therapy in this discussion. That's addressing galactin 3 on a physical level. And we are publishing papers to support it. You know, it's kind of neat. I'm in the final stages of administration of a very large NIH grant to continue my research. And we get to connect with each other, just accept each other. If we can just do it, you know, my daughter told me years ago, she's an ordained Buddhist Lama. She said, you know, and when she was very young, she said, if each person could just open their heart to somebody on the other side and understand them, the world will have peace spontaneously, you know? So the peace outside, the environment that is heating up, the inflammatory world, we got some challenges, but we do have solutions. That's the beauty.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one. Yeah. What I find that once I get into a flow, then I just feel perfect the rest of it. I just feel better. Every thing that I do, I feel better after that, and then going to the next one. And some things are challenging, but that is And so then learning how to get into that state. And, you know, it's interesting because that as something came up the other day, I had the surgeon that I loved, who was very busy. And then he loved Pink Floyd. And so we would always listen to Pink Floyd. And I felt like most of my life, I could kind of grip a situation and drive it into being okay. There was a situation that was out of control, like, and especially in anesthesia. And that was because I could go into fight or flight and force my way to take a situation that was profoundly out of control. Somebody was dying or something, or just, you know, huge physiological perturbations of anesthesia and general surgery and problems. But then now I almost never do that, because then now I just kind of wait and receive and relax and kind of get into kind of a calm state and then wait for the idea to kind of expose itself to me. And interestingly, that first strategy is an amazing strategy when you're like 37 and everybody loves it, but it's like a terrible.
We all did it at this age. You know, you noticed when you said your eyes went up because you're connecting and getting the information.
Yeah.
I hope we spend some time together. I'll show you a trick how to move to, there's another level of doing this. When we meet, I'll share with you.
Oh, nice.
It's really neat. But that's the idea. You know, you just, if you're totally open, it just comes to you with no effort. And then there is a certain quality that you pass to your patients. That's the healing that you said. It's not what you're telling to them when you talk to them. That's important. I mean, don't tell them, like, you know, but it's the energy that goes with it. It's the intention. It's the privilege of working with someone and at the same time understanding we're no better than them. We're all in the same boat. One day we are the doctors, the next day we are the patients. We're all in the same boat, you know? And we just share with each other, and we just have certain tools that can help people. And this is what really, this is like the interdependence, you know, the mutual support that is so needed in our society. We are really, you know, really a lot about what we are talking today beyond the summit is really like, we are really on a 911 call right now to try to somehow shift this inflammatory state that the world is in.
And you did a pretty good job of being an example of that through your COVID thing, you know, and then like we were talking, you took Paxlovid, the Pfizer drug, which would be very helpful. But then by being in, and so then like directionally, I think that's going to be a very valuable tool for people to have. But then suddenly, mental, you know, COVID has been such an overwhelming fear generator for so many people, but then suddenly, okay, how are we thinking about it? Mindset, number one. Number two, there's all of these things on the supplement side that you can do. There's some good medications now that you can do. And then opening up to that process. And then it's awesome to hear that part of it, but then maybe this would be a launching part to talk about peptides. You know, I think that one of the interesting areas would be with infections. And so as a prep, I love this idea of breaking down biofilms, because biofilms can be places where infections can sort of hide out. And be a place where they can sort of retreat to when we start to treat infections. And so then as a prep, we're always thinking about ways of breaking down those biofilms. But then, you know, maybe talk me through how you're thinking about peptide therapy vis-a-vis infections, but then in general, maybe once with this approach in mind.
Right, you know, so it's interesting. So the biofilm is one part, you know, if we look at we talked about galactin 3 and, you know, in biofilms, galactin 3 will mobilize the immune system in the first few minutes, but then it will shut down the effect. Because we have to remember, just like we want to survive, the infectious agent also want to survive. The spike protein of the COVID is almost identical in structure to galactin 3. It's survival tool, you know, how it hangs and it attaches. So in this sense, you know, I think that if you use more generalized peptides or use exosomes, or you're creating a wash of regeneration. And so often, you know, I will use all the things that I've described. I will often try to have a session with the patient just before, for example. And as you know, I use therapeutic apheresis. So I get a deeper cleaning of especially of lipid soluble toxins, of mycotoxins, pesticides, which are often sitting on lipid soluble. That's why I see the greatest dramatic shift. And then I think this day we have the selection of different peptides, which I don't actively, you know, I use more generalized things, and I work more in the preparatory, you know, in managing the patients. I've simplified my life, as I mentioned to you. I was, you know, for many years, I was in the survival drive, like you mentioned at the beginning, of developing new therapies. Mm-hmm. I can say now that I did whole body hyperthermia for years because I don't do it anymore, you know. I was probably the only one in the United States who was doing it quietly, you know, hundreds and hundreds of treatments. So I developed a specialty, how to enhance heat therapy with infections, with chemotherapy, how to attack, how to balance. So now I'm at a place where I'm more like supporting. I'm an old man already, you know. I'm taking it in a different way. And I'm learning that when you really refine your skills, you need to do less to get more. Mm-hmm. So in this sense, you know, I think that if we follow this logic, and was so exciting for me when we connected, is when we talked about your recognition that certain muscles, like we talked about the neck muscles and ganglia and the PTSD and past traumas, that you are addressing this, you are basically opening a highway for change instead of just dripping or injecting certain peptide that will make somebody feel good for a few days, and can help in an infection, of course. But again, you want to make sure you don't drive an inflammatory response. It's very important. And again, I have specific research on this, you know, that I published, and just we don't have time to get into all of it. It's key really to remember that the powerful tools are part of a big picture. And you and I really resonate there. It's very tempting for doctors and for patients to pull a nuclear weapon without thinking about the very small weapons or tools they can use that can sometimes get the same effect or get them ready for the treatment. That's really the overarching strategy that I really wanted to emphasize in this specific summit, and that I will share with different appendixes, like 10 steps to optimize your peptide therapy, where I kind of outline practically how to do this. So the reason why I talked about the detox process, because we detoxify all the time. Every time we exhale, we detoxify. So since the exhalation takes twice and more time than inhalation, we detoxify most of the time. We need to detoxify to allow for transformation to help. On the membrane level, we're talking about membrane receptors, insulin receptors, in many diseases. We don't want to go into the different ones. The beauty, as you said, you know, we talked before the interview, which is so true. We have the tools. And once we have the tools, we can pretty much treat anything. We won't be successful with and in everything, but we have the tools to address. I remember a colleague of mine who worked with me for many years as a doctor. She still comes, she's retired. And somebody came with this horrific, somebody called with, I think, double lung transplant and liver transplant and three more diseases. And they said, Isaac, can you see them? I said, yes. And how can you see them? He said, well, I'm going to listen to them. I'm going to hear their stories. Mm-hmm. You know, I just had a case like this with a patient that saw one of the biggest centers in the country for years and years. And here I am sitting in my chair, Zoom call, an hour, and you're unveiling the whole story. Mm-hmm. Just nobody took the time to sit back and have no preconceived ideas. But yet they have to admit a certain level of knowledge that you do accumulate over decades. So it's the idea that you learn the knowledge and then you unlearn by letting go of concepts. So that's the process that is needed for healing. And within, peptide is really one of the key waves of the future, together with different stem cell therapies, with different targeted therapies. But we cannot lose the holistic view, which is, in my feeling, a danger. You can see it in many places where, you know, even things that you're supposed to be an alternative are now very driven towards drug and medication. And keep it within the big context and then use the biochemistry, use the powerful tool. That's how you get amazing healing.
Okay, so then I'll give you one from my perspective. You'll like this. And then this also kind of gives you a sense of maybe how we're thinking about things. I had a lot of experience taking care of, you know, real crazy substantial PTSD situations. And so we had been doing stellates forever. And the in parallel to that, had a lot of sort of significant Lyme patients and Lyme and mold and complex illness. And I had always been a little nervous about taking people who are real fragile and treating them up front. And so I had always delayed doing the stellate. But then we started over this last year doing more of that. And then everyone did well. And so then I started to realize, oh, okay, that, so thematically, that fight or flight stuff, moving that up in patients with complex illness. Now, what else are we doing? We're thinking about detox and stuff like that also, just like you. So then that's good. And so then, and then just for some people out there doing stellates, one thing that you'll find is that, I think that there's ultimately going to be a very strong correlation. And I found one article about this, that there's slightly decreased blood flow to the brain in patients with complex illness. It seemed there's a correlation between that and like the small fiber neuropathy that these people will get. Stellate will increase that blood flow. And so then and what I do now is relatively lower dose, especially for complex illness patients, like just 3 cc, 0.5% ropivacaine. And then I will just put a very small amount, like 1 cc to 0.5 cc by the vagus nerve next to the carotid. And so then I come very carefully and I'll just put a little bit there by the vagus. And then what happens is when you do it like that, and that's a very advanced injection because your needle's right by the carotid artery. But then what will happen is they will get, their eye will droop and they'll get a profound kind of Horner syndrome. And then the reset will happen. But then the reset will, because I'm using a small amount of local anesthetic, it comes back pretty quickly. So it's pretty easy for people to go through. And then sometimes people will get a headache, but then that headache, that's because they're getting more blood flow and then that will reset.
I want, because it's so valuable. I want to give some, so it's really interesting. Your first concept, the fact that you moved it up, it's called in Chinese medicine, tonification through sedation. You need to slow down. You need to create a space. That's exactly how we started the conversation. Mm-hmm. When you block, the body forgets the memory. It just forgets it. And it comes back in a different way. So you're creating space for them. Space for change. And that's really key, definitely. And that's, we do this a lot. It's actually, you are, you know, in my book, there are three chapters about how to change. So first is detoxification. The second, healing the scars of survival. And that's what you're doing with your injection. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know, of course, we have the external scars, but you're able to go into the internal scars. Mm-hmm. It goes straight into the nervous system and really releases this PTSD. Often it's multi-generational. You know, in my book, I tell the story about myself, my grandfather, his Holocaust trauma, I never met, I'm named after him, and how my healing affected my mother without her knowing even. So you have a lot of shortcuts with this treatment. That's so neat, but that's really what's happening. You are basically erasing genetic and mainly epigenetic tendencies and traumas of this life. And then you're creating a blood flow that can allow things people can pick up in a different place. It's beautiful.
Right. Yeah. And you know, there's a song, John Prine has the song called Sam Stone. I don't know if I told it to you, but it has a line, little pitchers have big ears. And so little kids, they hear everything that mom and dad say. And so that's how they pick up that epigenetic trauma.
Because
if mom and dad are not okay, then probably that means they're definitely not okay. Right. And so then that gets them running that energy that I'm not okay.
Yeah, totally.
But then, if you could kind of come to this realization of, oh, I'm okay. And interestingly, when a lot of times people will come in and they'll say, oh, I already did this. I already started doing breathing exercises. I changed my diet. And then they're well on the way. And I don't even have to do it because they're receiving, they're going to listen to this and they're going to sort of understand a little bit of the framework and then get into this headspace, which is why I think there's going to be an acceleration of how effective we can be because people are sort of bought in. I got an idea. So then I'll tell you this one, and I think you're going to love this one in terms of 1.5 of preparation to get to the 2.0 of, like, let's say doing peptides. So then the one thing that I found is there's these new category of peptides called bioregulator peptides, and they tend to be small. They're only 2 or 3 or 4 amino acids. And so because small peptides, people react to much less than big proteins. And so then for people who are toxic, then those small ones, they're going to be less likely to have immune reactions to or mast cell reactions to. Now, if you do therapeutic plasma exchange or plasmapheresis or anything in that category, that's going to regulate immune function. So that's going to be optimal. But so then the bioregulator peptides regulate organs. And so then one of the things that I have found is that for patients, if I have them start, and there's one for the spleen called Vylon, and then there's one for the liver, Livogen. And so then I'll do the immune bioregulators and then the spleen thymus as part of my detox. And I'm kind of introducing the idea carefully and slowly. And it's almost, my analogy for it is, do you remember when, did you ever read The Hobbit?
Yeah.
So then remember Gandalf, he comes and he puts a little sign on the door that says, oh, there's going to be transformation here. But then what happens is he comes in and then he's introducing this idea very casually to Bilbo that there could be something significant happening, but he doesn't overwhelm him too much. But even then it's a little triggering. And so then what he has to do is talk to him. And then he has two of the dwarves come, and then two more, and then two more. And eventually they're all there. And then eventually everything happens, but he didn't overwhelm them by having all 12, because if all of them came, it would have been too much.
Totally.
So the peptides is kind of like this. And then I the small peptides, KPV, GHK, I think are amazing sort of initial things, particularly in the complex illness thing. And then adding in immune stuff, obviously, is going to be helpful.
Amazing. You're doing amazing work. So much, really. It's so true. We often do this in even as part of healing, like in my retreats, we will address every organ, you know, with our color and sound. It's kind of similar. You're giving very, very gentle messages, and you're allowing, you know, the more gentle they are, I think the peptide is smaller, it can penetrate to smaller areas, to areas which are difficult to really get to, you know?
Yeah.
So definitely. Okay. That's so neat.
And the liver, you know, there's an aspect of, if you fix the gut, then that's crucial, because that's the detox pathway of our body, right. Which is why it's lucky for me when I do podcasts, because I just get to sit here and I have the constellation of all of these, the different gut healing like concoctions that I've made. But then I noticed that once that starts to happen, then liver function starts to get better. What's your number one top couple strategies for turning detox pathways on and supporting in that direction?
You know, so I mean, I have I developed a very specialized supplement, because one of the keys with detox is the organ support that you mentioned. So I always, one of the flaws of detox, including detox formulas, they don't realize the body needs energy to detoxify. The body needs circulation to detoxify. So a good detoxify strategy, you always need to have adaptogenic herbs. I work a lot with a combination of herbs and nutrients and how they relate to each other and minerals. And the thing that you said with a small peptide is beautiful, because, for example, I will prepare tinctures that support each of the organs based on the detox cycle, which again, it's a whole lecture. I don't have time. I a little bit touch on it in my book. There's a certain flow when the liver lets go of blood, right? What happens? It goes, hepatic vein goes to the right heart, goes to the lung. The lung gets affected first, then it goes to the heart, then it goes to the circulation, then it gets to the kidneys. So you see different stations. So you want to prepare the body exactly what you're doing with the peptide. Chinese medicine was aware of it. And so in this sense, but I think now I'm also adding a lot of pesticides binding and support.
Which would be, what are the top three binders for pesticides?
So right now, you know, I developed a product called GlyphoDetox, because it's specifically, you really look at pesticide. You know, we have this concept that it's okay to have a certain level of pesticide in the body. It's like a little bit of poison is okay. No, zero poison is okay. Mm-hmm. So if you look at glyphosate, there's only one of them. And the glyphosate formulations have so many toxic additives. Glyphosate disrupts the gut membrane. You know, it causes gluten sensitivity. It causes dysbiosis. It delivers inflammatory compounds into the brain. If we look at pesticides, we look at the three kingdoms. We look at the water. We look at the plants that affects meat. And we look at the mineral of the earth. So I address both of them, because I always believe, we talked about it, wherever there is a problem, nature will also introduce a solution. So I use specific pectins, pectosol has its own benefits in binding mycotoxins and stopping inflammation. I use high molecular weight, high esterification pectins to bind in the gut. I use alginates. Again, it's very similar polyuronide mechanism, but greater mechanism. And alginates were shown to bind many pesticides. And I use kelp, because kelp has life in it. It has the minerals we need, right? There's the energy. And then I use shilajit. Shilajit is this concentrate from Ayurvedic medicine that I've been given by different people in Asia like 15, 20 years ago. And actually, I analyzed them then before they were popular. It was amazing how clean they were, you know, like no heavy metals. I was amazed. They are rich with minerals, and fulvic acid can bind glyphosate, can bind heavy metals. And then I use glycine as a way to stabilize the gut membrane, to help glutathione, and also to help the exchange with glutamate and with glyphosate in the brain, the neuroexcitatory damaging effect of glyphosate. So I use this together with pectosol, and then I have a certain probiotic that I really like. I really love it, probiotic. Reason why I love it is because it's liquid. It's the beneficial bacteria is grown on healing herbs. That's what we talk. So it's fed healing herbs and some of the pectosol. So you get a liquid that for the 50, 60% that it works, you will feel a difference in your gut in an hour or two sometimes. You can feel the healing.
What's it called?
It's called Ecoprobiotics.
Oh, really? Okay, I'm gonna try it.
And it's liquid, so you know, it's like, because it's about having life, like peptides, can bring life, they can bring energies, you know, they can create change. It's a similar process. We want to create a movement. and then there's so many preparations, but it's also about really separating between what we want to take in, nourishment, and what we need to let go of. It's the same process. And that's why is the ileocecal valve so problematic? And then appendicitis, but the whole area, right, for us, not only because the terminal ileum absorbs a lot of things, that's one of the reasons, because it's a very dim, it's a clear demarcation between until here I absorb, and from here on I let go. So people have a confusion with this. You can see changes in the way they eat, in their eating pattern, in the time to eat. They confuse between what is theirs and what is not theirs. They hold two things, same survival. So the ileocecal valve is a reflection of a lot of what we talk today, you know, about how to nourish ourselves and how to let go of what we need to let go. So, this is what anal personality and constipation is. We hold on to what we're supposed to really let go. So, you know, there can be mental constipation and there's a certain acupuncture points for doing it. So all of these I put into my treatments and I try to somehow take this, is you can get a sense, highly individualized care, like each person is a universe, and there's some way, a way to translate it into supplements. And often the formulation process comes to me in dreams or in meditation. I got this bunch of researchers who helped me. No, and it sometimes takes 2-3 years from the point I get an idea for a simple supplement until I feel okay enough with it that I pull it out.
How long do you, let's say there was a person that had a moderate level of pesticides and glyphosate, and they started taking a protocol like you're outlining.
Right.
How long do you think it takes to really detox effectively that from the body?
You know, it's a great question because we are not living in a vacuum. You know, right now I'm doing a clinical trial and most of the people are around the cornfields in Iowa, you know, so you can see glyphosate, you can see, and it's incredible, the other toxin, even like from gasoline products and environmental, it's like insane. So it depends. I usually like to tell, if someone is relatively healthy, then for example, for glyphosate detox, I'll tell them to take 2 twice a day on an empty stomach for about 2 to 3 months. If they are really sick, take it longer. And of course, some people are sensitive, they have to start slower. But then we have to realize, something like removal of pesticides is something that we have to do for the rest of our life in a small dose because we are constantly exposed. You know, I'm very lucky I live in West Sonoma and there are no airplanes that fly above us. That we are very lucky. I've realized now how lucky we are because in the last few years, I'm realizing how much, you know, there is leaded gasoline in planes. There's so many additives. So it depends on the exposure. So a certain level has to be part of a daily regimen. It's a part like, it's not like you said, if we take good care of the gut, if we don't absorb the pesticides, if we don't take them in our lungs, and then you've got the pectosol, which is well published on removal of heavy metals, multiple papers. I presented some of the first one in 2005, I think. You know, it was like one of my big discoveries. Removes lead, removes mercury, removes arsenic, cadmium. It actually removes uranium and cesium. You know, we published a lot of this. So, but we also are breaking the lattice formation. We're creating communication between the body. We're reducing abnormal inflammation. We are regulating the immune response. And then if you get this and on top of it, these are simple things that are also very affordable. On top of it, then people like you and I build a more sophisticated treatment system as needed.
Okay, I'll react to several things you said, just kind of interesting. So then one thing is that you were talking about the ileocecal valve. So for people who don't know, there's this valve that is between the small intestine and the colon. And the small intestine is 30 feet long, but it's only about as big around as my finger. And so there's not supposed to be any bacteria or anything in there. It's sterile. And there's absorption happening of minerals and stuff. and food. And then the large intestine's a fermentation factory that's as big around as my arm. And it's 5 or 6 feet long. And then that's kind of the final aspect of digestion. And so then there's this theme that people will have trouble transitioning from small intestine to large intestine. A lot of times because actually people can get yeast and bacteria that start to go upstream and start to live in there, causing inflammation. And so when we think about detox strategies, then fixing that and kind of managing that, and a lot of times we do that with herbal antimicrobials and stuff, but they call that SIBO or CFO. So fixing and managing those and having a diet and lifestyle around that can be important. And I think about it. I thought I was a genius and I was going to be I bought a farm and became a farmer trying to grow organic food early. And then there was pears on and blackberries on the farm, and I ended up eating so many of them, I got SIBO. And so then I got to fix that, which was amazing because it was like I learned how important the gut was. And now I just kept doing that, and I just keep working on that gut thing. And now I just can't even believe how good my gut feels. And I think that that's an example of how I just feel better and better and better the more that I do around that category. I'm going to personally go through your protocol, and I'm going to do it for a year. I had a patient that worked in an auto body shop that had the worst Great Plains lab I'd ever seen from exposure at work. And then he took your modified citrus pectin. I never told you this, and this was like before COVID, and for a year, and then it went basically to a perfect score, and it took a year. And so then that was the moment.
No,
that
mate, I don't know how I did it, because I'm outgoing, but somehow people who talk to me say, no, you are like, it's the best secrets in town. That's why I'm now, I feel like I have to share this with the world, because it's a gift from nature, you know, and we have done so many years, you know, we are close to about 80 published papers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's, so when I hear this, I say, wow, you know, it makes my day, you know, it makes my months, it makes my life, because you hear these stories and you don't know them until you meet doctors who tell you these stories, you know.
Right. And so then that one made me realize that, you know, the we're Bay Area people. And I was at about 6 years ago, I was at the Bridge concert that Neil Young gives. It's a concert that is a benefit for a school that takes care of kids with fairly profound, you know, neurological and cognitive and developmental issues, called the Bridge School. And then he got up at the end of the night and he said, you know, you really make my day and my week, and really you make my entire life by being here, because there's people, it was a helpful kind of positive thing. And interestingly, then, you know, I heard that and I just felt so good. And I think about that moment all the time. You know, and I feel, and so it just reminded me of that. But then interestingly, I think that is our most important strategy, is helping people feel good. And so then as I go back into listening to that last little bit, the idea of doing something to help people feel a little bit better is crucial to this whole thing. And so then you heard Dr. Elias say that he uses the adaptogenic herbs. And so I think that that's an important little tool, because then these are things that will give you some energy and give you a little bit of starting to feel a little bit better. And then that is so crucial, because then that allows you to believe in the story that we're telling, or potentially that you're telling to yourself, that you're actually going to get better. And so then—
you know, it's interesting. There are certain adaptogenic herbs that are bigger than one person, we say. They can create a communication, like a community support. Sometimes we like one chia astragalus is an example. which actually is an adaptogenic, but at high dose become actually a detoxifier.
Which so, one?
Astragalus.
Wang Qi.
So sometimes, you know, like when somebody is very sick and weak, I would have the people, the family take the same herb with the patient to create community of change and support. But yeah, it's exactly what you're saying. We need the energy to make the way. So that's one principle. And often you can't see it when you look at an ingredient list. And that's the value. Like, for example, I was once in a meeting with, I formulate for a lot of people and a lot of companies here and there. And you meet with scientists who really know a lot about the biochemistry, but they are not clinicians. They don't have this big picture. So then what you get is a list of ingredients based on research. You know, there's no glue. When you look at a formula, you have to feel it. You look at it, you feel it, and you say, okay, is there a flow? And for me, if I feel my formula doesn't have a flow, I put it aside. I tell my people, let's meet in a month or two, or in 2 weeks, or in 3 months. Then they bring it back. I look at it. Sometimes it goes like this. Sometimes it takes years and years until you're there. Say, wow, you can feel the power. It has a flow.
Mm-hmm.
And in one level, modified citrus pectin pectosol, which is supposedly one ingredient, but it's not. It's so magical. The structure of the pectins, people still are not totally clear. We are the first who showed that low molecular MCP pectosol gets absorbed into the blood. We put some marked antibodies on the pectin so we could track it, and we track the half-life. But it has all these side branches and neutral sugars and the concentration. And there's a lot of wisdom in nature. Just like what you're saying, the peptide is a piece of a protein. So you're taking something which is created and you're using a small part of it to really target it very specifically. And that's the beauty of keeping the big picture and having these very targeted tools, you know?
Okay, good. So then, and this is, I've got an idea for you, because then this one would be aligned with this theme that we've got in terms of like preparing the body. And so then, one of my ideas is that the reason to do adaptogenic things is to feel a little bit better. And the real reason to feel a little bit better is to help believe in the story. And so get into a heart space. What is the heart like from Chinese medicine? Peace.
Right.
And then to get into an idea of peace around that and to get into an idea of feeling good. And so then one thing that I found is that there's some peptides that will help with mitochondrial function. And so then I kind of consider them to be adaptogenic.
Totally, absolutely. Peptides.
And so then some of them are hard to get, like SS31, Humanin would be a little bit in that category. MOD-C would be somewhat in that category. In terms of feel good and sort of cognitive enhancing and kind of an adaptogenic from a neurological perspective, FGL would probably be in that category.
And I have a question for you. Do you feel that they will selectively go to healthy cells and won't do the same, for example, for a cancer cell?
So then this is the defining question that we need to think about in terms of cancer versus non-cancer. But in general, the one thing that is worrisome from a cancer perspective is thymosin beta 4 is potentially used by cancer cells. And so then what I like is the fragments of thymosin beta 4. It's like a keychain with these different fragments. And so then we'll use the fragments, which are small pieces, rather than that. But then,
well, I can tell you, because I'm doing a cancer summit in February, and this is going to be your topic in my summit, to talk about peptides in cancer. I would love to totally interview you on this.
Oh yeah. So then, I would like to interview you on it, because I think it's such a interesting question, because the most important thing is to manage biology, get these detox kind of things going on, create an archetype of a story about yourself.
So let me answer your question a little bit toward the end of the interview. So it goes back, believe it or not, to the survival response. What response the cell is going to take. So if you are, for example, we can see that PD-L1 inhibitors, you know, which is like the big new immunotherapy in cancer, stop working at the presence, with the presence of galectin-3. Merck knows it. The non-small cell lung cancer patient don't respond to Keytruda if galectin-3 is elevated. Why? Because the body, the immune system, the immune response is not correct. So you get the extra cellular and the membrane. But there are certain natural compounds that will allow a different response based on the metabolic status, the P53, the mTOR1, the AMPK. Again, we can't go explain all of it. And Honocule is one of them. It's one of my favorites. And because what Honocule will do, it will create an oxidative pressure just on the cancer cell. When the mTOR1 is turned on, when hypoxia-inducing factor is turned on, when pyruvate dehydrogenase is blocked by PDK, then it will become an anti-cancer effect. In the normal cell, it's amazing. It will recognize AKT, you know all the different, I cannot speak inside the cell. It will recognize when they are normal, it will become a powerful antioxidant. And it will do a similar effect in the brain. It will convert glutamate to GABA, so a very relaxing effect. So again, Honocule is from the magnolia bark. Now, I was very instrumental in bringing Honocule to the forefront, especially in cancer. And I can talk about it because I'm in California, to be careful, I can't do it anymore. I did Honocule IV for cancer patients, and it was amazing together with regular treatment. And I published 2 or 3 case reports. I didn't want to, I had 14 cases. It got accepted to another journal, but I just, at that time, I was concerned regulatory-wise, so I didn't. Unfortunately, with all the regulatory tightness, we can't get it. I'm the only one in the world who ever did Honocule IV. I mean, one day a big center will do it, you know, and that's great. I was in touch with John Hopkins at some point. But that's this regulatory. That's exactly what you're talking about. And yeah, it's for us to figure beyond an interview to really spend a few hours together and kind of come with some of this.
Well, so we're in the middle of sort of a framework of getting a clinic set up where there's no limitations from a jurisdictional perspective, and that's actually going to happen, I think, probably this year. Which means that, and then we're going to build a sort of a clinical research organization that I would love to have you part of that will help facilitate that.
I'd be very glad to be part of it.
But then what I was going to say was, I actually think, and you, but you took the words out of my mouth, but I'm going to re-say it because of that. I think this is so crucial. We need to, as after that initial sort of framework of our initial mindset of kind of getting going, have an anti-cancer strategy that we basically are running permanently in our lives. And that we, and so then these strategies, whether they be supplements, whether they be, because if we're driving an anti-cancer pathway, then you can take and put growth factors and things that are stimulating, and then manage senescence, and then manage these conversations kind of with that in mind. But we're always having two or three things that we're doing that are anti-cancer.
Yeah, of course, it's how we started the conversation today about making sure we use the right channels. And in this sense, we have shown a lot that's really the value of again, it comes back to so fundamental. Is it what drives cancer? What is a cancer cell? A cancer cell, maybe it's a good place to kind of close the discussion. Cancer cell is a cell that wants to survive. It's not willing to understand that it's mortal. The cancer cell is a manifestation of the survival paradox. So what does it do? It creates a microenvironment, so nobody can tell it what to do. And then it's going to survive, then it wants to expand, then it creates metastasis, and right? Yeah. And then how it's driven? By hypoxia-inducing factors, by mTOR1, which is what happens when we don't breathe? We get into survival mode. So in this sense, Pectosol as an example is just an example from one example that I happen to work on about what we talked about, but that's really how we started the conversation today. When you asked me, that's the idea of the strategy. How do we take the tools into the right highway? And unfortunately, cancer is a risk for all of us, definitely.
Mm-hmm. But then interestingly, and then this has just been one of these ideas that I have, you know, I did this 3-year doctorate of medical Qigong program with Jerry Allen Johnson, which was super amazing. And the last year was integrative oncology. And so then that was like, and I was kind of afraid to even go into that or talk about that because even now, you know, we're more focused, I would say, on infections and things. Although a number of people have been calling me and asking me about those topics. And interestingly, I think that I could go along with the trajectory of our conversation. If you are in fight or flight, then the immune system goes, wait, because the immune system goes into fight or flight and then doesn't really do its job. Whereas if you can get into relaxed and kind of accepting and kind of connection, then the immune system is working. If the immune system is working, it finds that cancer and then takes it out. And so then
it's really how it works. That's how it works. Now, we showed it in our recent paper on biochemical relapse of prostate cancer. It's exactly this. Prostate cancer was removed. It's coming back, starting to grow. There are no big metastases. They took the modified tetrospectin and 80% it slowed down, stopped, or got better. Why? The MCP, the modified tetrospectin, didn't kill the cancer. It allowed our body to function properly and take care of the cancer.
Right.
And some people live in metastatic disease. Same principle, exactly.
Right. And so then the interesting thing is that how do you prepare the body for peptides? In a way, there's a narrative that's a psychological and spiritual narrative that everything is okay. If you're using the modified tetrospectin, that is like what's actually going in your body and continuing that narrative that everything is okay. And then as that happens, it's like we become aware at a deeper and deeper level that everything is cool. And then it's from that framework then we're beginning to pick and choose within the diversity of everything that we have to start to rewire and turn things on and move into the future.
I know I can't mention the name for political reasons, but one of my patients and my greatest teacher, even if I didn't spend a lot of time with him in the Himalayas, I'm saying Himalayas for geopolitical reasons, it was the most legendary meditation master in the last 20 years of the 20th century, the beginning of the 21st. And he told me the instruction to me, says, so in Buddhism, we call it, you tear down the hut of ordinary mind. If you dissolve the survival, the grasping, then everything will be okay, even if it's not okay. As long as you hold, nothing will be okay, even if it seems okay. And this is really what we are talking about. And we are interesting. And he told me, you got to teach this in the West and find medical ways, you know, and meditation ways of doing it, which is, I said, what is he talking about? But then kind of it's, you know, he has left his body almost 20 years ago. And now, you know, here I am doing this and it's my passion, but it's exactly what you're talking about. It's beautiful.
It's a little bit like, you know, I'm just going to use this as an opportunity to talk about my favorite topic of all time, just about, which is Star Wars. Because that's what happened with Obi-Wan Kenobi, because Darth Vader is, and everything is not okay. Darth Vader is about to kill him. And then he connects into peace and then he transcended. And so then that was like this.
Exactly.
It's the same thing. You know what I mean?
Of course, it's all the same. It's just different manifestation of the same Essence, absolutely.
This is a spoiler alert. There's going to be a spoiler alert on this one, but then it's kind of worth it. I have been watching Picard, and it's a new sort of version of Star Trek. And so then the character Picard is just staggeringly, you know, amazing. And then the actor is just the greatest of all time. And so then Patrick Stewart. And so then what happens is he goes into the situation where he basically gives up his life to save someone, and he gets traumatized. And so then there's this episode where he goes into a coma. And then when he goes into a coma, basically he immediately regresses to the greatest trauma of his life. And so then he's a child, and he's a child locked in a room in a basement. And but this is almost like a analogy for what happens to all of us. We retreat back to this deepest trauma, and what is that trauma? It's an epigenetic trauma, because it was a trauma that came from his mother that probably has genetic aspects to it, and that probably has aspects that relate to how he can construct of his consciousness and reality on this plane. And so then the journey is, how does he go back and help this little kid come out of that room, so that that little kid, and then in healing the trauma of this little kid, what happens is that then he heals himself, and then he wakes up from
this
trauma.
This is the crux of what I teach in open heart medicine, is what I take people through in my retreats, in a unique way, going internally into the cells, and also what I do in the clinic. That's exactly what, that's really healing the scars of survival. I just touch it in one chapter before the last, but that's the secret. And the Galactic 3 is one concept about it, because we hold, but this is really, eventually, this is, wow, what a beautiful story. It's exactly what we do, because right now, the way we are responding and the way we are thinking and the way we are feeling is a result of countless people who created us in the last just 2,000 years. If you look mathematically, 25 years per generation, 1,500 already, an infinite number. And what we are doing now is going to affect countless generations in the future. Mm-hmm. And when our mind goes to the past, think about our parents, and we feel like we are there and we can experience them, well, two generations forward, when they think about it, they're affecting us right now. So I teach on it, especially during the retreat. There's a special diagram that I show sometimes. And then people go through the experience of multi-generational healing. That's what I told you with the story before the interview, how I healed. And I had so much energy. Suddenly with the COVID, I could just teach for 12 hours. Like anyway, I did a certain healing on this for the group, and it affected me. But that's because when we clean this, what you do with a stallion ganglion, I can't tell you how important it is. Head and body, you know, okay, when you're relaxing, we are finally at the moment a little bit. We're not driven by stuff from the past. So this is something with ultimately in meditation, we can do every second of the day. The value, for example, in meditating with open eyes is that right now as I'm talking to you, I'm actually meditating. It's no different than if I sit. There is no difference. Everything moves. Everything moves. There's an ongoing movement. That's really the infinite healing potential. That's beyond time. It's something. Mm-hmm. And yeah, but that's anyway. We sure covered. We've been talking for almost 2 hours. This is.
I know. We have to go. But then that ties into my ultimate theory that I'm kind of running all the time. And it's interesting, my one of my nephews is here with me, with my sister. And so then, and if we were talking about that idea, little pitchers have big ears. And so then imagine there's some trauma that's going down. So then it was like your dad had it, and then I have it, right? But then, interestingly, to the extent that that heals, my theory is that actually kind of begins to heal just backwards And so then you begin to heal that generational.
Can I stop you? It's not a theory. That's the whole thing that I do with people. Like in my book, we read the book. I always had pressure in my chest. I'm named after my grandfather, okay? My grandfather died from stomach cancer at age 50 after escaping from Poland. They were very wealthy. They escaped the day Hitler came in. And here, my grandmother survived to 98. We are at her gravesite. She died, and my mother said for the first time, 10 out of 12 siblings of your grandfather were killed by the Nazis. We never knew. My grandfather never talked about it. He stomached it. All my life, I think I told you, I had this intense pressure in my chest right here. I mean, people can see it, figure up like right here when I touched, okay? Now I feel no pain. Mm-hmm. Then through the meditation and through psychological work, I connected with his trauma. I'm named after him. I never met him, of course. And suddenly it's about 5-6 years ago, whatever it was, all the pain went away completely. Mm-hmm. But then my mother, who could never watch any program about the Holocaust, was suddenly able to open the TV and watch things about the Holocaust because the healing went backwards.
This is really,
it's not only a theory. This is open heart medicine. That's the idea of healing. So your theory is actually, it had a lot of practicality about it. This is the ultimate healing.
But then interestingly, then once that happens, then what happens is instead of generational trauma flowing towards you, generational healing is flowing towards you.
Totally, multi-generational healing. That's
which actually is what happens back in Star Wars, because then after that whole thing, then ultimately Anakin is healed. And so then,
as long as we are back to Star Wars, it's all good. Yeah, but it's happened in Star Wars and it can happen in life. We see it in group retreats where there's a group healing. And we really, just us being aware of it, and this is for every viewer, doctor or patient, we have the privilege of being healers, not only of ourselves, but of all people connected to us. If we remember this and we put this energy and intention out.
And then they they told me, just the fact that they told me to do something means I'm potentially not going to do it. And so they told me to keep this to an hour. But then the most important thing is that I think that this is the most important conversation of this whole peptide summit. And the reason is because to hear this as a framework and then connect to the idea that you can begin to kind of tell your narrative, tell your story, and then as that starts to happen, that's kind of healing your throat chakra, which then a lot of times allows you to kind of come into your heart. But then this as a framework, and as a framework of some very simple things that you can do that can start a process that you can then begin to kind of project manage detox, project manage the gut, project manage just your lifestyle and your wellness, and then consciousness. And that once you start to heal those things, they say that the trauma leaves a score in the body. But then interestingly, then when you heal it, then you begin to feel generations of healing flowing through you, and it's just magical. Then that then is the framework of the introduction. I studied with yoga with a very interesting two people. One was Arkady Sharon, and one was Shanda Ramate. And then these are like the best yoga teachers probably that of the world. And then Shandor started something called shadow yoga. And then he said that the initial situation in yoga was preludes. And so then we did dance, almost like dance type of movement that was relatively simple movement. But then you had to work on the preludes for the longest time before you could actually even begin practice. And so in a way, I would almost frame everything that we talked about today as a prelude. And interestingly, then that then sets natural processes in effect.
Exactly what we talk. Wow, I have to tell you, because I've been around a little bit, your patients are very lucky. And the one thing is really that you know, but kind of a reminder for other people, like especially people put acupuncture needles and they try to feel the energy. No, just relax. When you put your injection, just keep your heart opened. Just keep everything open, and then you will see. Everything becomes different. And yeah, you really created an amazing package of knowledge and intention. It's inspiring for me.
And I would, if I had to only give one person credit, I would give Arkady credit. He was just amazing, but maybe my parents too. But I'm so grateful to have you as a mentor, and I look forward to our collaborations and research and to learning from you. And I'm on behalf of the world, I'm just grateful that you came to this planet and decided to help us. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Wow. What I really enjoyed. Take care.
Okay. Have a wonderful life.